This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. The website Atlas Obscura, which showcases the world's quirkiest wonders, has only been around for a decade. But in that time, the company has visited and cataloged almost 20,000 places. Minnesota native and lifelong explorer Dylan Thuris is one of the co-founders of Atlas Obscura. The author and filmmaker will be at UW-Milwaukee's American Geographical Society Library this Wednesday for a presentation about the second print edition of Atlas Obscura, an explorer's guide to the world's hidden wonders. He joins Lake Effect's Bonnie North by Skype to discuss the creation of the company.
In some ways, I cite the real inspiration as happening in Wisconsin when I was about 12 years old. Because I grew up in Minnesota and I went on all these road trips with my parents. And on one of these road trips, you know, we went to Wald Drug and the Corn Palace and all of that kind of stuff. But we also stopped at, in Spring Green, Wisconsin, the House on the Rock. It always amazes me that most people have never heard of it, although if you're from Wisconsin, likely you're familiar, which is this wild, crazy, giant sort of house series of warehouses and rooms filled with everything from the world's largest carousel to a squid fighting a whale sculpture the size of the Statue of Liberty. And as a 12-year-old, I distinctly remember feeling like, if this is what's in the woods in Wisconsin, what else is out there? So from that time, I had always been kind of interested in this kind of unusual travel. It's what I like to do. But it wasn't until I was, you know, older in my early mid-20s that I met my co-founder, Joshua Foer, and we started talking about making a website where you could actually kind of add all these special, incredible places. And other people could come and submit their own places. And that was really how the Atlas Obscura was born. It was born as a website in 2009. And we just said, this is the kind of things that we love to find in the world, these, you know, small museums, outsider art projects. And you tell us what amazing hidden wonders you think deserve to be celebrated. So that's what it's been.
And so how do you decide? There are probably as many wonderful hidden wonder things in the world as there are people, you know. So how do you winnow down that list?
I think the actual sort of number of places may be close to infinite. I think you're right. It's really about how you look at a place in a lot of ways. And there is no one set of criteria. It's a little bit, you know it when you see it. You are looking for something that has an element of surprise that makes you feel like the world is a little bigger than you had previously thought, a little stranger. And so we just take it place by place. We see what people submit to us. We read kind of the story, the angle. We look at the photos and you know, do all of our fact-checking and reporting work. And then we decide this place really deserves to be in Atlas Obscura.
Well, you know, the House on the Rock also figured into Neil Gaiman's work, too.
Absolutely. He knows a good a place that is so fantastical, it's hard to believe. I remember in an interview, he said, I actually tamed it down a little bit for the book, because if I wrote it as was true, no one would believe it.
It was American Gods, right?
That's right. Yeah, which I love that book.
Me too. It's a phenomenal book. And, you know, so that's like two people who've mentioned, you know, House on the Rock. And for people who think that that's made up, it really isn't.
Oh,
you
no,
know, it's
it
there. And of course, I'm looking at the map of Wisconsin in the book right now. And of course, just sort of northeast of that is another fabulous Wisconsin thing, which is Dr. Evermore's Forevertron.
Truly, truly. And one of the things that I think is actually so interesting about both the House on the Rock and Dr. Evermore's Forevertron, because Dr. Evermore actually was part of building the House on the Rock, is that there was this kind of, you would call them like an artist collective now, like an installation art collective, basically operating in Wisconsin in the 1960s, 1970s, doing all of this kind of crazy, amazing sculptural work, fabrication work. They just didn't couch themselves as fine artists, so it was never kind of framed that way. But really, that's what was going on. I mean, Dr. Evermore and Sid Boyum and all of the guys who worked on House on the Rock, Alex Jordan, were all kind of like really pioneering. I mean, now there's groups out in like Meow Wolf, which is a giant arts collective that has a not in some ways a sort of similar kind of space out in Santa Fe, New Mexico, you know, is very hip. And but these guys doing this work in Wisconsin were way, way, way ahead. And Dr. Evermore's Forevertron is this amazing sculptural space filled with all kinds of enormous machines and metal bars kind of welded into creatures and spaceships.
And it's supposed to heal you, too.
Yes, that's right. And there's something about time travel involved.
Yes, I think there is. Yeah. Well, and Wisconsin and the upper Midwest seem to be a perfect place for an Atlas Obscura type publication because there's so much. I moved here from the East Coast almost 14 years ago now. And when I got here, just the art installations across the state, it's like there's a lot of really eccentric creative people who made their homes here. And you think, wow, really? It was a long winter, I guess.
I guess there are certain places in the world that seem to be these kind of focal points of just a certain kind of offbeat creativity. It's a kind of creativity that doesn't put on airs. It's not about being, I'm a very fancy artist. It's just like, look, I had a shop and I decided to fill it with little dioramas of anthropomorphic taxidermy where all the animals are playing cards and boxing each other. I'm actually referring to a place called the Moccasin Bar in Hayward, Wisconsin, which is one of my all-time favorite bars. And it's just all of Wisconsin and much of the Midwest is like this. But there's something in the water, something in the air.
Yeah. Well, the great thing about Atlas Obscura, too, is that it's not just human-made things. There's a lot of natural, nature-made things that make up part of this, too. And I just happened to, as I'm sitting here, open the book randomly to, what page am I on? 426. And we're in Mexico. And it's the Hierve el Agua. And it's the freshwater pool topping off what appears to be a frozen waterfall. I had no idea.
Yeah, I mean, we try and when we were comprising Atlas, you know, we realized right away, first we wanted to gather things that had been left out of traditional guidebooks. So that was sort of maybe there were some abandoned kind of sites that were like that. There were these kind of outsider artist things or kind of quirky roadside things. But there's also a lot of natural phenomenon that, you know, deserves to be celebrated and is really, truly incredible. And we try and include a lot of those as well. There's one in upper Minnesota that I particularly love called Devil's Kettle, a river flows and then splits into two waterfalls, and one kind of goes on normally, and the other goes into this kettle, into this, you know, rock formation, and just disappears. Basically, no one really is sure what happens after that. They're not sure how it formed because the rock is kind of not the right rock to dissolve in this way, and they're just not sure where it actually ever lets out from the Devil's Kettle. So it's this little fun natural mystery in northern Minnesota.
Yeah, I actually was looking at that page not too long ago, and I was thinking, well, it's got to go somewhere.
Yeah. The Great Lakes. Yeah.
But the idea that it's just impossible to trace, or it seems to be, is really fascinating. Do you think that because the world in a lot of ways has gotten smaller, because we're so interconnected now in a way that 19th century explorers weren't and couldn't be, that books and websites like Atlas Obscura play a role in helping us find the wonders of the world when we think we've seen it all?
I think that's right. I think what's ironic is the world does feel small now. We know what's happening in every corner of the globe in some ways, or we think we do. And, you know, all this information is at our fingertips. But in reality, the world is still very, very, very big and filled with more things than we can ever imagine. And so I think part of the point of Atlas Obscura, the sort of almost like the spiritual mission of it, is to remind people that the world is this surprising, wondrous place, that it has not all been done, that not everything is some strip mall or some chain store. Like, sure, you see that everywhere you go in the world now. But if you dig a little deeper, you'll find such truly tremendous places and people. And that's our goal, is to give people that feeling, that kind of transcendent sense when you are traveling and you see something, you go, wow, really incredible that this exists and that I'm here and can experience it.
Right. There's something about travel that if you're open to it and not complaining about how things aren't the same as they are at home, that it opens you up. in a way that that almost nothing else does, at least in my experience. There's a, you know, if you just arrive somewhere you've never been, and maybe you don't speak the language, and maybe you don't know, you know, which side people are driving on and all of that, but you just sort of open yourself up to it, it changes you in a really fundamental way.
Yeah, I call it seeing with new eyes. And I think there's like, it can be done locally. Like you can kind of force yourself to approach things with that same sense of openness and curiosity. But travel is just such a shortcut. All the little changes, all the differences, your brain actually snaps sort of on it, everything that you've been cheating at, where your brain has been ignoring because it sees it and already knows what to expect and what's there. And so you're not actually really taking it in. Your brain has to kind of go, oh, wait, I'm not familiar with any of this. The street signs are different. The stoplights are different. Even the trash cans are different. And so suddenly it's like someone popped a set of new eyeballs in your head. And like you notice every little thing. And it's a really wonderful experience. And in a way, it's a lesson about how we should try and look at the world as much as possible, traveling or not.
Right. Being aware and open to everyday experience wherever you are. Yeah. And you're right. It's harder when you're in your routine. And,
totally.
Yeah. And so, you know, books and websites like the Atlas Obscura, you know, help you do that. And I have to say, I didn't open this up this far before we started talking today, but I got to the back of the book to Buckminster Fuller's Dymaxion Map. And
oh, yeah.
I think of Buckminster Fuller, and he was this eccentric inventor and I would say a genius.
I love him.
Me too. And yet I had no idea this map existed. And can you explain what it is? Because it's beautiful, but it might not be what you think it is.
He wanted to solve a particular problem, which is that all maps are essentially lies because you have to take a sphere and mash it down into a flat space. And so, you know, every Mercator map we look at, the map that's in every classroom, it's the Greenland problem, right? Greenland has gotten enormous on this map, and Africa is actually quite a bit sort of smaller relative to the other continents than it should be. And so he thought, okay, what's the closest sort of object to a sphere? And he thought an icosahedron, a 20-sided polyhedron, or basically if you've ever seen a 20-sided dice, it's that shape. And what if I mapped the globe onto this and then just unfolded it and laid that flat? And so that's basically what he did. So in doing so, he also rearranged all the continents because you can unfold it along any given seam. And it's just this incredible way of rethinking the relationship between space, between the continents. And so it's my favorite. It's absolutely my favorite map projection is his Dymaxion map.
Then it makes you realize how much we think of the world through the maps that we're familiar with, that's what we think the world is and what it should look like and what is north and what is south and what, you know, which continents are bigger or smaller and what the relationships are. And I'm reminded of a West Wing episode where they turn the Mercator map upside down because why not?
Sure.
It's perfectly valid. And everyone freaks out. It's like, that's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. And because it is, because we're trained to look at it a certain way.
That's right. And when the particular, you can unfold it in any way, but Bucky was really quite fond of one unfolding, which basically every continent is connected to every other continent, which is really right. When you look at it, you don't think about North America being connected to Asia and Russia, but we, of course, are over the Bering Strait. So, you know, when you start to see that there's this almost unending thread that connects the whole world, it really changes the way you think about space and even about how you might travel. You know, you think, oh, maybe what if I did a trip up the West Coast, hopped over the Bering Strait and down the coast of Russia. So that would be a hard trip to do for various
reasons. It might be hard for a lot of reasons, but boy, what a great trip. That would be fantastic.
Exactly.
End up in Japan, but that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Precisely.
Exactly. So I have to ask you, are there trips that you've taken since you started doing this? Are there trips that you've taken because of the research that you've done?
Oh, every trip I take is because of the research we've done. Every single place we go, I end up visiting an Atlas site. It has completely shaped all of our travel. And it's also given me the chance to take a couple of really grand scale trips that have been amazing. Josh and I took a trip down to South America a number of years back and went to the last Incan bridge, also called the Quechua Chaca, basically this bridge woven out of grass in rural Peru that is rewoven every year because it sort of rots. It's organic material. And it's made in the exact same way that it was during the Incan Empire. It's, even though each year the bridge is totally new, it's also this unbroken cultural, historical connection to the Incan Empire. And so it's just seeing places like that. Actually, Josh and I are taking a trip coming up soon. We're helping guide one of our group trips to Turkmenistan to visit a place called the Gates of Hell. And Josh and I have been talking about, you know, we used to sort of joke with each other back when this was like a project being run out of my kitchen, and say, you know, when we make it, we'll have a beer at the edge of the Gates of Hell. Well, a decade later, we are actually going to have a beer at the edge of the Gates of Hell, which is, to clarify what I'm talking about, is a giant 250-foot wide hole in the Turkmenistan desert that has been on fire for 45 years. And so that is a trip that I'm really looking forward to going on. And so absolutely. And you know, even when I'm visiting home in Minneapolis, it's shown me new things. I grew up maybe a couple of miles from this place called Orfield Labs, and I never knew what it was, and it didn't look particularly interesting. But it turns out to have contained the world's quietest room, a room that had the lowest, it had like a negative 20 decibel rating. So you'd go and you'd sit in this little sound chamber, and over time, as your ears attenuated to the space, you would start to like hear the internal workings of your own body, because there was literally no other sound to fill that space. So your ears suddenly started picking up on things that you'd never heard before. And at one point I raised my eyebrows and I could hear the sound. And so that was 2 miles from the home that I grew up in. And so that sensation of being reminded that wonders can be incredibly close at hand, that you really don't know what's sort of just in your own backyard, it has been such an ongoing gift of doing this work.
So if there's one piece of advice you could offer a wannabe traveler, what would it be?
I think the piece of advice I would offer is to start where you are, to stop thinking about travel as getting on a plane and flying around the world. That is great and it's wonderful. But if you go at it, you do some research, you sort of set your mind around what is intriguing to you, what stories you want to tell or learn more about, you can travel a 100-mile radius out from your home and find absolutely unbelievable things. So I would tell people to put on their kind of hat of curiosity, their hat of I am an explorer, and look in their own backyard. And I think people are surprised by what they find there.
Well, we are so looking forward to having you here. Dylan Thuris, it has been such a great conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Dylan Thuris is the co-founder and artistic director of AtlasObscura.com, and he spoke with Lake Effect's Bonnie North. The second edition of the Atlas Obscura book is out now. Thuris will be at UW-Milwaukee's American Geographical Society Library this Wednesday evening at 6:30 as part of the company's Trivia Book Tour.